Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. So, Srimad Bhagavatam, Canto 4, Chapter 31. Narada instructs the Prachetas. Text number 9, right? Yeah, okay. Narada Uvacha. Tajjanma Tani Karmani Tadayush Tanmano Bachaha Nirenam Jaina Hi Vishvatma Savyate Haririshvaraha Tajjanmatani karmani Tadayustanmanovachaha Nrinam jainahi vishvatma Sevate harir ishvaraha Bolyega. Is somebody? Janmatani karmanai karayustanuman vachaha nahi vishvatma harishvara. Ladies, you chant, any? Nacha Nanani Dharmani Nidam Yena Hibishvatma Himate Harishvara Sajjan Matani Karmani Naradu Vacho. Narada said, Tajjanma, that birth, Tani, those, Karmani, fruitive activities, Tat, that, Ayahu, span of life, Tat, that, Manaha, mind, Vachaha, words, Nrenam, of human beings, Jaina, by which he certainly, Vishva Atma, the super soul, Savyate, is served, Harihi, the Supreme Personality of Godhood, Ishvaraha, the Supreme Controller, tajjan matani karmani tadayus tamano vachaha nrinam jena hivishvatma savya te hari ishvaraha. The great sage Narada said, when a living entity is born to engage in the devotional service of the Supreme Personality of Godhead, who is the controller, supreme controller, his birth, all his fruitive activities, his lifespan, his mind, his words are all factually perfect. I'm just recovering some fever. My voice is still kind of bad. Please repeat. The great sage Narada said, when a living entity is born to engage in the devotional service of the Supreme Personality of Godhead, who is the Supreme Controller, his birth, his fruitive activities, his span of life, his mind, and his words are all factually perfect. Jai tajjanma tanikarmani tadayus tanmano vachaha nirinam jena hivishvatma sevyate harir ishvaraha. So this is, of course, the fourth canto, and very advanced. Actually, in 2.2.12, in the purport, Prabhupada says one should not dare to recite beyond the first two cantos unless he is free from gross illicit sex. So very, very advanced topic, fourth canto. Yeah. First two cantos, he says we should stay with those as long as basically we can't follow the four principles, and you should hear those. So here, Narada is talking to the Prachetas, and the Bhagavatam is a very systematic presentation. It's very logical. It's very organized. Other Puranas, most of the Puranas do not have commentaries, as we've heard. Most of the Puranas do not have commentaries. But Srimad Bhagavatam has a commentary by everybody, because everybody wants to show that Srimad Bhagavatam supports Karma Mimamsa, Srimad Bhagavatam supports yoga, because it's so great. Our good disciple Radhika Raman Das, it's hard to figure out if I'm his disciple, he's my disciple sometimes, but in any case, he said when he was studying at Oxford, there was one Professor Rao from University of Madras, and he was a emeritus professor, retired with full honors. So they would bring him to Oxford to teach regularly like that. So he was teaching one seminar on Srimad Bhagavatam for Radhika and maybe more, like 10 more students. And he says, I've read all the major Sanskrit literatures. I'm not trying to be proud because I've done this for 40 years. Okay. So I've read all the major Sanskrit literatures. And many minor ones too. Many minor texts. And he says, when it says in the Vedic literatures that the Puranas, they look like stars in the sky. Okay, we go here. Okay. The Puranas. Okay. The Puranas. Okay. When it says that the Puranas, they look like stars in the sky, so bright, so brilliant, so beautiful, until the moon of Srimad Bhagavatam comes up. Right? Then all the Puranas, they look at the moon and they say, oh, he's bigger than we are. So they're very proud until the moon of Srimad Bhagavatam comes up. So Dr. Rao said, it's not an exaggeration. He says, for the sophistication of the grammar, for the beauty of the poetry, for the profundity of the philosophy, Srimad Bhagavatam is in a class by itself. There's no other Vedic literature which comes in the, can come close to it like that. There's one professor from University of California. I think his name is George Hart. And he wrote a book called Rapid Sanskrit Method. It's an introduction to learning Sanskrit. And he says, why should somebody learn Sanskrit? And he says, well, because like Arabic, like Chinese literature, it's been the carrier for culture for thousands and thousands of years. And so the number of literature, pieces of books, literature in Sanskrit is, he uses some big word, I forgot what it is, like that. Astounding, amazing. There is a bibliography of all known ancient Sanskrit literatures. Indologists, they keep this. You know, all this, you know, in the Maharaj of Mysore's library, some book on this. So it's a bibliography of all known ancient Sanskrit literatures. It's called the Catalogus Catalogorum. And when it was last published, it included over 160,000 ancient Sanskrit texts available. More than 160,000 ancient Sanskrit texts. And he says this includes, you know, Ayurveda, Gandhara Veda, Vastu Veda, law, medicine, everything. All these different sciences are included like that. The British, of course, they had a systematic program to cover all this. Convince everybody that India was a stupid country, like that. But now, because of Srila Prabhupada, people are making so much investigation, and they're discovering that science was very developed in India. You know, there are descriptions of how to make batteries in the Vedas before the time of Christ. You know, so many very sophisticated technological abilities were there. But they considered them not so useful. Why learn these things? You can get everything you need very easily from nature. So why do you need complicated factories? Yeah. So he describes all the different Vedic literatures. He says that the Mahabharata and the Ramayana are on as good as the Odyssey and the Iliad. Panini, without a doubt, is the greatest pre-modern grammarian. What else? And Kalidas ranks among the greatest poets in the world. And he says, except for maybe a few other Indian literatures, in my opinion, Srimad Bhagavatam is the greatest work of devotion ever composed. Like that. So this is Professor Rao, Professor Hart, and they're glorifying Srimad Bhagavatam as the greatest literature. And then Radhika and Krishna Kshetra Prabhu, they both graduated from Oxford in Sanskrit. Now they started working on an anthology, you know, a collection of different articles by different professors, modern professors, on Srimad Bhagavatam. Because before, as I've heard, most of the modern scholarship on Indian literature outside of India was about Shankara, Advaita Vedanta, because nothing else was very much known. And so Western scholars don't have much contact with our, you know, dualistic, you know, spiritual point of view. But because of Prabhupada, there's more interest. Actually, there are many professors now who are Hare Krishna devotees in prominent universities, and respected too. It's actually changing quite a bit. Even in the last 5 years, it's changed a lot. So they started an anthology. They looked for a publisher. And it's hard to find a good publisher, you know. But I think it was Columbia University took the book, which is very prestigious. It's a very respected publisher. And they said, okay, this is very nice. This will be a good book. It'll be popular, right? Everybody will like it. But can you also do a second book? And of course, that's very rare, no? You said, can you do like an extract and summary, right, of Srimad Bhagavatam? And they said, yes, we can do that, yeah. But to do an academic book is not a small task. You know, to sit down and write something. Everything has to be very precise. It has to be edited, so on. So I've been working on it for a long time. And finally, it's finished. The first book is finished, and it's gone to the publisher. So I asked Radhika if this is going to create a revolution. And he said, yes, yeah. Because these are very respected people. They're not Hare Krishnas. They're very erudite, respected scholars from all over the world. So it seems like the revolution Prabhupada is talking about is starting to happen. Like that, you know. Because if they, you know, I've read, maybe other people too, I've read part of 1001 Arabian Nights. I started reading it and gave up. It's like, wasn't that nice. Chinese classics, maybe one of the most famous is Sun Wukong, which is probably pronounced differently, Sun Wukong, or it's also called Journey to the West. And it's a true story. It was written maybe in the, I don't know, maybe the 12th century or something. And it's a true story about a monk who in the 7th century was sent by the emperor of China to go to India, because they had Karmakanda scriptures, how to do fruitive activities, get this result, that result. The Chinese, what's it called, pantheon? All their gods. It's the same as the Indian. There's a Yamaraj, there's an Indra. Same thing. Same gods and goddesses in China as you get in India. So they, you know, he was going to the West, and one monkey and one piggy. What else? One monk, one pig. One monkey, one piggy. One horse and one friar went along with him like that. And so pretty much everybody agrees that the monkey is Hanuman, you know, taken in that position, but he gets distorted this way and that way. But all along the process, they have so many different things about Buddhism and so many things about Chinese culture, what is right, what is wrong. It's nice, but again, it's nothing compared to Srimad Bhagavatam. And I don't want to irritate Yadunandan Swami here because he's Spanish, and if you get Spanish people going, they're... But maybe he'll agree that yes, Don Quixote is very great literature by Miguel Cervantes. It's always in the top 10 in the world. But even still, in terms of coming to theology and these things, and Shakespeare, same thing, you know, Bible, Quran. So again, if you even a little bit of survey of world literature, if Srimad Bhagavatam is known by people, then right away it's going to be accepted that this is far and away the greatest thing like that. You know? One time I saw one Mayavadi commentary on Srimad Bhagavatam. Did Shankaracharya do a commentary on Bhagavad Gita? Yeah. Did Shankaracharya do a commentary on Srimad Bhagavatam? Why not? Srimad Rasbihari Ki Jai. There's two reasons, no? You know? First, because it would have been an offense to distort it like that. And second, Prabhupada says, because he knew it was impossible. It is so direct that anybody who can read it with even a little bit of intelligence would see that his commentary was distorting it quite a bit like that, you know? So I just saw one Mayavadi commentary. I was looking a little bit. And the second canto is talking about you should worship this demigod, you should worship this demigod, you should worship that demigod. And then it comes to the verse, Akama, Sarvakama Va, Moksha Kama Udaradi, Tivrena, Bhakti Yogena, Yajate, Purusham Param. Okay. So I was wondering how he was going to translate this, right? So as far as I know, if some rickshaw wala, he wants to go into a simple restaurant to take a little simple prasad, and he wants to go to the bathroom. There are two doors, right? One says Purush, the other says Stri. You know, so this word Purusha is just like, you know, such a clear, simple word. So I was wondering how this guy was going to translate this, you know, Yajate Purusham Pradam. So he said, if you have all desires, or if you're free from all desires, or if you want to be free from all desires, with a firm vow, you should worship the Supreme Person. There's just no way you can get around it. It's just so clear. You know, Srimad Bhagavatam, like that. Yeah? So, and also the other Puranas, they start talking about something, then they start talking about something else, then they include a few chapters about gem therapy, like that, which jewels are good for which. But Srimad Bhagavatam, from the beginning to the end, is focused upon understanding who is Bhagavan. Right? Ete chamsa sakal pumsam, Krishna's tu Bhagavan swayam. Yeah, we've already talked about many incarnations, many people, but now we're talking about swayam Bhagavan. So Srimad Bhagavatam, from the very beginning to the end, it's very systematic, gradual, logical development. Like that. And all the different editions are the same. Some small changes here and there, but basically all the different editions of Srimad Bhagavatam in different parts of the world are the same. Like that, you know. And so it's 12 cantos. First two cantos are Krishna's lotus feet. Like that. First canto is like a preface. Who's speaking this book? Who's asking the questions? What are their qualifications? Under what circumstance was it being written? What is the purpose of this book? So that's a preface. So first canto is very systematic. Sukadeva Goswami is talking to Maharaj Pariksit. He's about to leave his body. He saw Krishna before he was born. You know, Sukadeva Goswami saw Krishna before he was born. The age of Kali is coming. We need a new incarnation. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Second canto. And then Sukadeva Goswami explains everything in three chapters. Brahman, Paramatma, Bhagavan. Maharaj Pariksit says again, he explains how Brahma spoke to Narada. Maharaj Pariksit says again, he explains how Vishnu spoke to Brahma. And so much science, so much technology, how the world was created, all the different elements, all these things. Very scientific. You know? You can give such wonderful scientific lectures to big scientists based upon the Bhagavatam. So then at the end of the second canto, the sages say, well, this is all very nice, you know, how Vishnu creates the world and all these things, but what did Maitreya and Vidura talk about? And maybe they talked about something a little higher like that, a little more interesting, you know. So then this third canto starts with the meeting of Vidura and Maitreya, and right away Maharaj Pariksit asks, please tell me how God creates the world, how God maintains the world, and how God destroys the world. You know? But this is where we live. We see the same verse. He's talking about human birth. That's how Narada starts his instructions. You're here. You're human beings. We live in this world. Bhumir apo nalo vayu. Okay. If we can become God conscious in this environment, we're God conscious. This is where we live. So then he explains how the world is created, the elements, the different species. It's going a little slow. Brahma is creating mental children. I guess Marichi, Atreya, Narada, yeah. A little slow. So out of his anxiety comes Swayambhuva Manu and Satarupa. And he asks them to engage in biological reproduction. So they say, okay. I'm condensing here. And so then they start producing biological children. How many children do they have? 3, 4, or 5? 5. Okay. What are their names, sir? He's our minister, he belongs to the ministry, he belongs to the acting ad hoc committee of the Standing Committee of Education. Jai, anymore, Ministry of Education, Ki Jai. Jai. But I wish to give a slight improvement. Yeah. I will now give you a mnemonic device. Dap up. Okay, dap up. Or in Spanish, dap oop. Like that, yeah. Devahuti, Akuti, Prasuti, Uttanapada, Priyavrata. Dap up. First of the three girls, the Uti sisters, Devahuti, Akuti, Prasuti, Uttanapada, and Priyavrata. And this is the order they appear one after another in the Bhagavatam. A third canto, we see Devahuti and her son, Kapila. And in the fourth canto, we see Devahuti Akuti. She married Ruchi, one chapter. Then who did Prasuti marry? Daksha. And there's their story, fourth canto. Then, let's see, the third canto, fourth canto. Yeah, I get confused here. Get past 50. Devahuti Akuti. Third canto. No, one, two, three. Yeah, fourth canto. Yeah, okay, fourth canto. Then we go ahead with Uttanapada, and he was the father of Dhruva. And Dhruva had so many descendants who are very famous, on down to Maharaj Parchinibarihi, like that. And the Parchetas, who appear in the same line like that. So this is why we're talking about the Parchetas, at least in terms of the didactic device, because it's in this line. So fifth canto then goes to Maharaj Priyavrata, and he did so many wonderful things. And after him, what happens? Sixth canto. Down in his line is Maharaj Rishabhdev, and finally Bharata Maharaj. In Bharata Maharaj, we get the description of hell. So then in the sixth canto, Sukadev Goswami explains to Maharaj Parikshit how people can avoid going to hell because of their karma. And that's the story of Ajamil. By taking the devotional service, you can finish your karma. Then he goes back to the story of the Parchetas, like that again. And after that, the Parchetas, they had a son. Who was their son? Daksha! Yeah. It wasn't enough to have the head of a goat. He had his hard disk rebooted, right? He had his hard disk became corrupted, so he had to have it rebooted, like that. So he had the head of a goat, you know. I guess, you know, still functioned. Yeah, still ran everything like that, yeah. But that wasn't enough because he was offensive to Lord Shiva like that. So then he took birth again. And then he became the father of the Hariashvas, who else? The Ilyashvas, you know. Their father all sent them off, Daksha sent them off to do austerities, so they could become good grihastas. This is what every father does. He wants his sons to go to college, go to the university, study hard, right? Become a doctor or a lawyer or an engineer, and then you can have successful grihasta ashram. So Daksha sent his sons to also go and do austerities. But then Narada Muni came there and convinced them all to become devotees. Hey guys, look at these books. I bet you haven't seen pictures like this before. I thought, oh no, sir, you know. Yeah. You know. So they all became Hare Krishna devotees, you know. So Daksha became disturbed and talked to Mrs. Daksha and had 1,000 more sons. And Narada Muni went to the hostel again, the university, said, hey, you guys, you know, your brother has all bought these books for me, you know. Yeah, yeah. So he made them all devotees, you know. So, and Daksha was about to have a heart attack when he heard all this. He was insulting Narada, then he became peaceful and apologized. You know. So then Daksha had more children, right? And the news spread throughout the universe, so Narada went to Daksha's house. And Daksha said, oh Narada, you've come to preach to my sons and my children like the others. Well, go right in and preach to them there, you know. So Narada went in and came out with his vina a little askance. They're all girls, Daksha. Yeah, Narada, but you're a strong brahmachari. You go ahead. Just go and preach to them like that. You know, go right in there. And so Narada said, you win, Daksha, like that. So Daksha got some children that Narada couldn't corrupt, like that. So then they were married to all the brahmachari sons of Vishnu. And from them, finally came all the animals, demigods, everybody else like that, you know. So that's the sixth canto. Then Indra offends his priest, Twashtas, and he goes away. And then what else happens? Then he takes Twashta as a guru, kills him, offends the first guru, kills the second one. And then Twashta creates Vritasura to get revenge. And Vritasura is a devotee. So then we have the seventh canto, how a devotee can be a demon. And that's the story of Hiranyakasipu and Prahlad. A little bit about Varnashram. The eighth canto then talks about the other 13 Manus. Because we've gone Swayambhuva Manu and all of his children. So eighth canto, he says, what about the other 13? Okay. I forgot their names now. But this is a story then of all the different incarnations that occur during those Manus. Ninth canto is our Manu, specifically. Vaivasvata Manu. And so his descendants come Ram, Ambarish, and of course Krishna. So then, click on the plus sign, we expand out in the 10th canto to 81 chapters about Krishna. 11th canto is disappearance of Krishna, the dynasties after Krishna, and then we go 12th canto and we get summary of Srimad Bhagavatam, glories of Srimad Bhagavatam, disappearance of Maharaj Parikshit, the Yadus, and that's 18,000 verses in 14 minutes. Die. Yeah, like that. It's very satisfying to go through it like that and remember the different incarnations. But the idea is that, you know, by doing this, if we do it systematically and we take these to heart, Srimad Bhagavatam is for reciting, karma yoga. Srimad Bhagavatam is for understanding, jnana yoga. Srimad Bhagavatam is for contemplation, dhyana yoga. And Srimad Bhagavatam is for waking up our prema, like that. You know, so it's a wonderful tool. And if you do it properly, by the 10th canto, you're qualified to go to the Ras Lila. Jai, Srimad Bhagavatam ki. Jayananda Prabhu never went much beyond the 4th canto. And his name is on the, you know, the Vaishnava calendar with Vishwanath Chakravarti and everybody else. So if we can even go to the 4th canto, take it to heart, you were doing good like that. So here we're in this, in the now with the Prachetas, and again, this is a little bit elevated instruction. Other speakers have been talking about how still it's Adhyatmika Gyan, it still is trying to deal with these basic problems about you're not the body, you're not the mind, you know. And so here, Narada Muni is coming back and talking about the same thing, you know. Taj Janma, Taj Karma, Taj Ayus, Taj Mano, Vacha. You know? When a living entity is born to engage in devotional service of the Supreme Personality of Godhead, which means basically when he's taken a human birth, who is the Supreme Controller, his birth, his fruitive activities, his lifespan, his mind, his words are all factually perfect. And Prabhupada's wonderful purport. In this verse, the word Nrinam is very important. There are many other births besides human birth, but Narada Muni herein especially speaks of human birth. Among human beings, there are different types of men. This, of course, sounds like Rupa Shiksha, the instructions to Rupa Goswami. This covers this so nicely in one chapter. You know, Prabhupada quotes it many times. Of those who are advanced in spiritual consciousness, out of human beings or Krishna consciousness, they are called Aryans. And amongst the Aryans, one who engages in the devotional service of the Lord is most successful in life. The word Nrinam indicates that lower animals are not expected to engage in the devotional service of the Lord. But in perfect human society, everyone should engage in the devotional service of the Lord. It does not matter whether one is born poor or rich, black or white. There are so many material distinctions for one who takes birth in human society. Yeah. But, yeah, so many distinctions. Yeah. But everyone should engage in the Lord's devotional service. At the present moment, civilized nations have given up Krishna consciousness, God consciousness, for economic development. They are actually no longer interested and in advancing in God consciousness. Formerly, their forefathers were engaged in executing religious principles, whether one is Hindu, Muslim, Buddhist, Jewish, or whatever. Everyone has some religious institution. Real religion, however, means becoming God conscious. It is particularly mentioned herein that birth is successful if an interest in Krishna consciousness is taken. Activity is successful if it results in serving the Lord. Philosophical speculation or mental speculation is successful when engaged in understanding the Supreme Personality of Godhead. The senses are worth possessing when engaged in the service of the Lord. Actually, devotional service means engaged. Actually, devotional service means engaging the senses in the service of the Lord. At the present moment, our senses are not purified. Therefore, our senses are engaged in the service of society, friendship, love, politics, sociology, and so on. However, when the senses are engaged in the service of the Lord, one attains bhakti, or devotional service. In the next verse, these matters will be more clearly explained. And the next purport is almost 3 pages. Wow. When one great devotee of Lord Chaitanya saw Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, he said that all his desires were fulfilled. He said, "Today everything is auspicious. My birth, my birthplace, my neighborhood, they're all glorified. My senses, my eyes, down to my toes are fortunate. Yeah. Today my life is successful because I have been able to see the lotus feet that are worshipped by the goddess of fortune." So as I was going through this, I was seeing, you know, so many verses, Prabhupada's paraphrasing so many verses, Sarvapadi Vinir Muktam, Swaipum Sam Paro Dharmo. You can see, it seems that Prabhupada is just paraphrasing these verses like that. And of course, Prabhupada is taking it from the Acharyas like that. So this is parampara. You just take the previous Acharyas, you put it in some understandable language, maybe put in a little bit of your realization, and it goes on like that, you know. So basically, purport is talking about this, human birth. And of course, we all know this verse, Bharati Bhumate Hoile Manushya Janmayar Janmasartaka Kare Parakarupakar. Yes. If you've taken birth as a human being in India, you should make your life perfect and then help other people. You know? Two different lectures, I heard Prabhupada saying, anybody who takes birth in India, it means they were interested in spiritual life in their previous life. Like that. So we know about all of you. Like that. You had some interest. Like that. Yes. If you want good machines, where do you take birth? Germany. If you want love, romance, where do you take birth? Okay. What else we got? If you want espionage, or else England. Prabhupada said the British are the most cunning people on earth. Yeah. Good food, Italy. Good court system, Switzerland. Like that. Yeah. Every country has its karma, just like every person. So India is the land of philosophy. If you look in the Encyclopedia Britannica, there's only one country in the whole Britannica where it talks about the philosophy of that country. And you can guess that it is India. Mahabharata Mahan. And it's not even a part of the entry on India. It's a separate entry. It's India, philosophy of. You know. So that's why, you know, we're trying to establish a university here in India. This is our committee, our education committee was many things, but we're all feeling that, yeah, this is very essential in terms of a strategy. A strategy for ISKCON is to have a very nice university in India. Okay, if you want to become a car mechanic in ISKCON, you can go to the ISKCON University in Germany. If you want to, you know, become a spy or a politician, maybe you have in England, they can have a ISKCON University in England for learning politics like that. How to be an effective GBC member like that. Yeah, yeah. But India, especially for theology, of ontology, epistemology, ontology and epistemology. Praxeology, maybe we'll go to the West, you know, like that. So it's very good. And Prabhupada says, but everybody, it's not just that we should have a university here. University is to educate the Brahmins. And what do the Brahmins do? They make movies. They put on puppet shows. They do things that common people can appreciate. Prabhupada says that Nanda Maharaj could not read or write. Said he would hire some educated fool to do it for him. Right? Yeah, yeah. He said, what to speak of the girls, the gopis, you know. He said, but they would go to classes. The Brahmins would give classes, and they would listen. He said, they knew everything about the cosmos, just by hearing like that, you know. So the Brahmins have to be educated, and then many of them, they have to put this in popular media. You know, television, puppet shows, whatever is the popular media. So common people could understand. And everybody can do their work. Somebody can be a cobbler. You know, making shoes. Somebody can be a Brahmin. But everybody can be Krishna conscious. There's service for everybody. So any human being can be engaged like that. And these temples, of course, are a great facility for everybody. You know? I mean, who's the most advanced devotee here? Maybe it's the guy in the shoe stall there. Ever kind of look at him? The guy in the shoe stall there. Say, Hari Bol to him and see, like, you know, if he starts trembling. That. You don't know. And anybody here could be the greatest devotee, you know. Because there's pigeons also, or crows too. So very nice establishing a Krishna conscious movement where everybody can engage like that, every human being. And India is especially a very nice place to preach Krishna consciousness, to develop it so it can go all over the world for this level. So it's kind of my little understanding of this text, you know, its position. Narada's talking to the Pachetas. And he's starting with this point. Think about your...